Welcome to the Community Wellness Program here on KUCB 89.7 FM. This week we are discussing grief, grieving, and how communities react to grief. Our guests today are M. Lynn Crane, the director of USAVE, and Judy Reuter, who is a behavioral health counselor at the Onalaska Wellness Center. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. This is a great opportunity to kind of talk to folks and process a little bit about what's going on.
So today's topic is grief. Why is this an important thing to discuss in this community at this point?
Well, Judy and I and several other of the human service providers have been talking about the things that have been happening in the community, especially the last few months. We've suffered some pretty tragic losses, and I think a lot of people are still reeling. And I think it's important for people to talk about how people grieve and how we can help each other get through this. And this is one of Judy's areas of expertise, so we thought it would be a good idea to come down and talk about it.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to do maybe is just do a little bit of a refresher on the stages of grief. I know most people already know those. They were kind of developed by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She did a lot of research in studying grieving and stages of grief. So I'm going to run through those. And some of the work they've done beyond that, there are actually two additional stages that I'm going to... So the first stage is denial, sometimes called the shock stage, and that's where someone receives news that a loved one has died or something has happened, and their first reaction is, oh, no, it can't be true. It can't be true. You must have made a mistake. That follows rapidly for a lot of people by the stage of anger. This isn't fair. This isn't right. How could God let that happen? You know, whatever their personal belief system, they will sometimes react out of anger. Occasionally, we even see the anger directed at the person who died of how could you do this to me? The next stage would be the sort of bargaining. And we hear people saying, please don't let this be true. Let this be a big mistake. Let this just be, you know, not as serious. Maybe this person isn't really dead, or this accident isn't that bad, or something else. They will try to bargain. I'll be a better person. I'll give more to my community, whatever it is. So we see that happening a lot. As the sort of acceptance sets in, a lot of times people will become depressed, and that's where the reality of whatever has happened is starting to sink in, and it's like, there's no bargaining, there's no getting around this, and people go into a depressed stage. And people exhibit depression in a number of ways. We need to remember that. Some people become sad, withdrawn, they don't eat, they don't sleep. Some people become irritable, and they will present themselves as being belligerent, like they want to fight and argue all the time. And we forget that that sometimes is also, when someone is depressed, that's how they react to it. So just to kind of keep that in mind. The final stage identified by Kubler-Ross was the acceptance stage, and that's where it's finally sunk in. This is real. This is a forever thing. This is a not coming back kind of thing. The other part, beyond that, the stages that have been identified, there's the hope stage. Because once you reach that acceptance, as human beings, if someone in our lives has died, we need to carry on. And when we finally accepted the reality and the finality, we move into a stage of looking forward to what's my life going to be like without this person. And at some point, we begin developing hope that we can have a life, that we can go on. So that's the hope stage. And then the final stage is called the reconstruction stage. And that is where we literally put our life back together, because it almost feels like our lives have been shattered and torn apart. So this is where we sort of put our lives back together in a new way. So that would be the final stage. I think it's also really important here to throw in that not everybody goes through these stages in order. Not everybody goes through every single stage. Not everybody goes through them the same way. There's no one way to grieve. And it's really critical that people realize that, because some people can get a little judgmental about it.
Such as thinking someone should be getting over this by now, or, you know, you need to start moving on with your life. Mm-hmm. In talking with people, I've learn that for many people, they when they start to hit that hopefulness phase in the rebuilding, it's not a straight course. They may take two steps forward and take a step back.
Exactly.
Something will hit them that will make them remember or bring all those feelings back, and that's okay. That's the way it is. And
right.
you know, I think it's really important that people treat themselves with kindness and, you know, give themselves time and be patient and be loving toward themselves the way they would to someone that they cared about to help them through it. And if someone is really being debilitated by grief, they're in such a depression that they can't get out of bed, I mean, for an extended period, to where it's really impacting their life, what are some of the resources in our community that someone can turn to?
If somebody has reached that point, and it's kind of a judgment call because a lot of people initially will have just that kind of reaction.
Sure.
And it's about being respectful of their bereavement, being respectful of their grieving, and allowing them to have that in whatever form they go through it.
Sure.
But if it continues, if the depression continues and does not seem to be abating, I would recommend friends, family members, the first thing to check out is that person suicidal? Because that's a critical point there. So check that out, see how the person's doing. The other thing is to encourage the grieving person to get out, do something physically active. And if they need a little more help, they need to go to the clinic and talk to one of the doctors about possibly being put on an antidepressant medication, because sometimes they need sort of a jump start for a short period of time.
Sure.
There's also both clinics, the OWC and the IFHS clinic, both have counselors who can work with people around grieving.
Sure.
So, you know, you can always call and talk to any of us on the phone.
Right. And I think that when many people are in pain, in any kind of pain, people want to numb out. I mean, they either want to sleep, they want to eat themselves into a coma, they drink, they want to use drugs, legal or illegal. And that may offer temporary relief, but it's certainly not going to make the situation any better in the long term or help someone deal with the loss. So some of those activities you just mentioned would be so much more healthy coping skills. Reaching out for help, you know, acknowledging that you need someone to talk to or that you want someone to come sit with you, even if you don't feel like talking.
Yeah.
And one of the things we talked about was sometimes people don't know what to say. So can you talk a little bit about that for us as outsider, for someone who's had a direct loss?
Sure.
How can you be helpful?
I think one of the things that's most difficult for a person who's suffering a bereavement, who is in that grieving stage, is that people around them frequently don't know what to say. And we have this idea of, I have to say something to make them feel better. I have to say something to fix it. And the reality is, in a situation like this, there's no fixing. There's no way to make it better. The best thing you can offer someone in a case like this is your support and your love. And let them talk, especially if they're willing to talk about the person they've lost. It's really important because it helps them to start remembering the good times and to recapture some of the good memories. It gives them a chance to process through some of that. So the best thing you can offer is basically a shoulder to cry on and an ear to listen. Those are the best things you can do. Encourage the person to eat. Encourage them to do some kind of physical activity to keep them moving. Mm-hmm. That physical activity really helps a lot.
Right.
A lot of folks I've talked to really have a hard time eating when they're grieving. And even if, you know, some kind of rich vegetable broths or something that's really easy, Jell-O, something that's easy to get down, cans of, like, Ensure, which has all the vitamins and minerals and stuff, something to keep them nourished because, you know, our brains need that too, and the depression and whatnot will get worse if they don't have proper nutrition.
Yeah, they need the nourishment in every way. And I think what you said is so true, that people, they don't know what to say. Sometimes they will distance themselves or say things that can be, without meaning to, can be more harmful than helpful.
Exactly.
You know, like, I know exactly what you're going through, or isn't it time you started getting over this, or things like that. So oftentimes, I think we say things because we're afraid of silence, and maybe sometimes it's better to not say anything.
And I would agree with that.
Just be with someone.
Just be there.
Just
let them know you support them. And without any kind of judgment. Part of it, this is my bias here, please hear this, my bias. Our whole culture in the United States is the 3 days for grieving. And if you look at most businesses, when they have, bereavement leave, it is 3 to 5 days. And after that, you're expected to be back at work functioning normally. And if after a very serious loss, you cannot function normally, it's like your whole brain has shut right. down. The chemistry's not working.
Right.
I've heard people described as suddenly becoming lazy, suddenly becoming stupid. And those are judgments around someone whose brain is not working because of the grief.
Right.
It's a total reaction. Grieving for a significant loss, with the research they've done, takes an average of 5 years. Not days, but years. Now, the intensity isn't the same. I mean, it lessens in intensity, but still it takes a minimum. So that means some people may take 10 years
right.
to grieve.
What about with the community? I mean, as Lynn mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of loss in this community
mm-hmm.
over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
How does a community express grief, and how does a community deal with grief?
Okay. And communities deal with it about a lot the same way as individuals. Collectively, you can see people who will withdraw from the person, who may withdraw from each other. We frequently see people, you see two types of people. There are the people that come over with the casseroles and they're immediately right there and trying to help, and there are the other people that just pull back. And that's not a judgment, that's just a reality. And I invite people to kind of examine their motivation for doing that and look at what they can do. The best thing to do to help a whole community, because with some of the tragedies that happen, they actually become a trauma for the community, and people begin feeling unsafe.
Absolutely.
And it really is helpful if the community can come together and talk about it, whether in small groups or large groups. Having the potlucks and memorial services we have here are absolutely wonderful, because that helps bring it out and helps people to begin processing through it.
Right.
And I think for the most part it helps those who've suffered the major loss as well.
Right.
But as a community and as a whole, it can help draw a community together to process these things and to kind of talk about them.
I would agree with that. And maybe it would be helpful if we could just talk really quickly about some of the resources that are available. Judy mentioned the IFHS medical clinic. Their number is 581-1202. It's the same number for behavioral health. The Unalaska Wellness Center, where Judy works with some other wonderful providers, is 581-2751. We have wonderful clergy in town if people feel like they would like to talk to someone with a spiritual background. And there's USAVE, which is 581-1500. We just want to make sure that people know that there are caring agencies in the community, and it's okay to ask for help, and that we're all in this together.
I would also encourage people, because sometimes people will not call in. They want somebody to talk to, but they don't want to call because they're afraid of being labeled as crazy, or they don't want to become a patient or whatever. With our agency, it's perfectly okay to call. We can talk to you on the phone, or you can come in, whatever, without necessarily admitting you as a patient. We need to sit down and talk and find out kind of what your needs are, and just sometimes it's just a matter of offering support.
Absolutely.
September is Suicide Prevention Month, and a group of community members will be teaching about that topic through various forums. Suicide and grief will also be topics at the Women's Conference. Judy, you'll be talking about transitional grief. What exactly is that?
This is a transitional community. It's transient. People are always coming and going. And we find a lot of times it's hard for people to make friends, or people reach a point where every time I make a friend, they leave, so they withdraw. So this is kind of what I want to address, is that type of grieving and how to deal with it.
That's great. And there will also be a lot of informational brochures and written materials at the Women's Conference,
mm-hmm.
too. So
I think one of the things is both Darcelle Williams and Donna Henry do a lot of work with teens and young people, and whether it's through Voices of Indigenous People or Alaska Kids Are Our Kids or the Natural Helpers Group, they are all working on dealing with teens on other issues as well, but on some of the suicide prevention stuff. And I think that will be real helpful for our younger crowd.
Absolutely.
Are there things that are aimed at people kind of in their early and mid-20s? So beyond teenagers, but still.
We don't have anything right at the moment specifically aimed at that group.
I don't think there is either, but there are plenty of resources, written resources and books, and there's some good information available online. The library has some good books on grief and transition. So people do need to, I think, to make the first step of seeking some help if they feel like they're being overwhelmed by things that are happening to them or happening in their community. And when we've had a season like we've had with one tragic loss after another, it can feel overwhelming, mm-hmm. and you sort of feel that the ground is shifting beneath your feet, mm-hmm. and it's not easy to continue to function under those when you're feeling that way. So mm-hmm.
That's it for this edition of the Community Wellness Report. Thank you, Judy and Lynn, again for being here. If you've missed any of this broadcast or would like to hear it again, you can listen on our website, www.kucb.org. We'll have more community wellness reports on suicide and similar topics during the month of September. Thank you for listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska.